The Last Supper. Jesus knew that one of his 12 disciples, one of the men who had been so close to him, was going to betray him. Judas Iscariot had gone to the chief priests of the temple and had told them he would point Jesus out to them if they would pay him 30 pieces of silver. Jesus knew that the chief priests wanted to capture him before the Feast of the Passover, and he didn't want this to happen. He wanted to enjoy the Passover supper with his disciples once more. So Jesus was careful to find a secret place where they might eat together. For his own safety, Jesus did not tell even his disciples what arrangements he had made. But about noon on the day of the Passover feast, he asked Peter and John to prepare the meal for them.
"Where shall we go to prepare the supper?" they asked.
Jesus knew that Judas was waiting to hear his reply. If he could find out where the supper was to be served, Judas would tell the chief priests so they could have Jesus arrested. But Jesus was prepared for this. He did not have to tell exactly where the meeting was to take place. Turning to Peter and John, he said, "Go into the city. There you will find a man carrying a pitcher of water. Follow him. He will show you a large upper room furnished and ready. There you are to prepare the supper for us." Peter and John did not question Jesus further. The carrying of water was a task which was always done by women. To see a man carrying a pitcher of water would be so unusual, they would know immediately that such a man was the very one they were to meet. At nightfall, Jesus led his other disciples to the house and entered with them into the upper room. The room was furnished with a table, couches upon which Jesus and his disciples could recline while eating, and a pitcher of water, a basin, and a towel. Jesus and his disciples were alone in the room. There was no slave to wash their feet when they entered. In those days, people wore sandals, so their feet were dusty when they came in off the street. Usually, a slave washed the feet of the guests as they reclined beside the table. Jesus looked around at his disciples to see if any of them had thought of offering to wash the feet of the others. Apparently, each of them was too busy finding a place at the table near Jesus to think of serving others. Jesus rose, removed his outer robe, and twisted the towel around his waist. He poured water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, wiping them afterward with the towel. When he came to Peter, Peter said, "Lord, why would you, my master, wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "What I do does not mean much to you now, but the time will come when you will better understand why I did it."
"But you are the master," cried Peter. "I cannot let you wash my feet."
"If I do not wash your feet, there will be no bond between us," said Jesus.
"Well, then wash not only my feet, but also my hands and my head," cried Peter. "For more than anything else in life do I long for a strong bond between us."
"The washing of your feet makes you clean," said Jesus. Then his face saddened. He had thought of Judas and of how Judas would betray him. "But not all of you," he added, "not all of you are clean."
When Jesus had finished, he put his robe on again and returned to the table. "Do you know what I have done for you?" he asked.
"You call me Master and Lord, and correctly, for so I am. And if I, being your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, you ought to wash one another's feet. I have given you an example. Do as I have done." Now, as they were eating, Jesus took bread and blessed and broke it and gave it to the disciples. "Take, eat," he said. "This is my body." And he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink of it, all of you, for this is my blood." Again a sadness fell upon Jesus.
"This very night," he said, "one of you who eat with me here now will betray me."
"Lord, who is it?" asked John.
"It is he to whom I give a sup," Jesus replied.
Then he dipped a piece of bread and gave it to Judas. As he did so, he said,
"That which you are going to do, do quickly."
Judas took the sop and went out. The other disciples thought Jesus was sending him to buy more food or to give to the poor or to pay a bill, for he was their treasurer. They didn't know that Judas had gone to the chief priests, that he would betray Jesus with a kiss, that the master would be crucified as a result of his betrayal. When Jesus was alone with his 11 faithful disciples, he talked to them for a long time. "Little children," he said, "yet a little while I am with you.
and I would give you a new commandment. It is that you love one another even as I have loved you. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. With these gentle words, the lovely and courageous Jesus met that experience by which he was to prove that life is eternal. The first Easter. Jesus had warned his disciples that he would be crucified. But, Jesus said to his disciples, "Have no fear. Though my enemies destroy me, I will rise again after 3 days and come to you." Jesus had tried to prepare the disciples for what was to come. But they just couldn't believe that he would be crucified and did not pay much attention to what he said. And so, when Jesus was put to death, they were so shocked and grieved, they forgot that Jesus had said he would rise after 3 days and come to them. They were not only grieved, but frightened. Since they had been Jesus' helpers, they were afraid they might also be put to death. So they shut themselves up in an upper room, hoping the chief priests and Pharisees would not find them. The third day after the crucifixion was Sunday. Early that morning, before it was quite daylight, Mary Magdalene and another Mary, both of whom had loved Jesus, started to the garden where Jesus' body had been laid in a new sepulchre, or tomb. As they walked along carrying spices with which to anoint his body, they wondered how they would roll away the huge stone which closed the opening of the sepulchre. They had seen how hard it was for two strong men to move the stone into place. But when they reached the lovely garden where the sepulchre was, they saw that the stone was already rolled away. Who had moved it? And why? The two women hurried forward. But when they looked into the sepulchre, they found Jesus was not there. A young man dressed in a long white robe was there, and he spoke gently to the two frightened women. "Do not be amazed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him? But go, tell his disciples that he is going before you to Galilee. There you will see him, as he told you." The women hurried away, terribly frightened and bewildered. Mary Magdalene felt she had to talk to someone about what she and the other Mary had seen. She had to find out what all this meant. Had someone stolen the body of Jesus? Mary Magdalene hurried to Simon Peter and John, the two disciples of whom Jesus was especially fond. "They have taken the Lord out of the sepulchre, and we do not know where they have laid him," she cried. Peter and John did not wait to hear more, but they ran all the way to the sepulchre. They found that Jesus' body was gone, as Mary had said. In the tomb, they found only the white clothes in which his body had been wrapped. Like Mary Magdalene, Peter and John thought Jesus' body had been stolen. Bewildered and saddened, they left the sepulchre and went back to the room where the other disciples were gathered. But Mary Magdalene, who had returned to the tomb, remained there. Sobbing, she went to the entrance and looked in once more. Through her tears, she saw two angels sitting there, one where the head of Jesus had lain and one at the foot. "Woman," they said, "why are you crying?"
"I am crying," Mary answered, "because they've taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him."
Saying this, she turned round and saw that a man was standing near her. She could scarcely see through her tears, and she just supposed this man was the gardener. "Woman," said the man, "why are you weeping? Whom do you seek?" Still supposing him to be the gardener, Mary replied,
"Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away."
Then the man, whom she had believed to be the gardener, spoke softly, "Mary." As soon as he said her name, Mary recognized his voice. She knew at once that this was not the gardener, but her beloved Jesus. Throwing herself at his feet, she joyously cried out, "Master,
do not hold me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father," said Jesus. "But go to my brethren and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God."
Suddenly, Mary had been lifted from grief to joy. Her beloved Jesus lived.
Mary Magdalene could hardly wait to share the joyous news with the disciples. Hurrying along as fast as her feet would carry her, she reached the room where the disciples were gathered together. "I have seen the Lord," she cried as she burst in upon them. "I have seen the Lord." The Journey to Emmaus. After Mary Magdalene had seen Jesus in the garden, she ran to tell his disciples that he was alive. But as they listened to her, the disciples shook their heads sadly. They felt Mary's grief had caused her to imagine things. They had seen Jesus crucified, and much as they wanted to accept what she told them, they could not believe that Jesus had actually reappeared and was alive. That Sunday afternoon, two of Jesus' followers started out for Emmaus. As they walked along, Jesus himself came near and walked along beside them. They nodded to him, but did not recognize him. They believed Jesus was dead, so they were not expecting to see him, and they were too disturbed to be much interested in strangers. Even when Jesus spoke, they didn't know him. "Why are you sad? And why are you so disturbed?" asked Jesus. The one whose name was Cleopas answered, "You must be a stranger in Jerusalem if you have not heard the things that have happened there in the past few days."
Jesus said, "What things?"
"We're talking about all that has happened to Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be tried and to be condemned to death and have crucified him. And we had expected Jesus to save all Israel. More than this, today is the third day since these things were done. And certain women who were also followers of Jesus astonished us with what they discovered this morning. They went early to the tomb and found that Jesus' body was not there. They hurried to us, saying that they had seen a vision of angels at the tomb, and the angels had told them Jesus was alive. Some of the disciples went to the tomb and found that it was as the woman had said. Jesus' body was gone, but him they did not see."
Jesus said, "Oh, foolish men, why are you so slow to believe what the prophets have told us? Ought not Christ to have suffered these things and to have entered into his glory?"
Then, beginning with Moses and the prophets, Jesus told them all the prophecies which applied to himself. The two disciples listened in wonder. Their eyes still upon the road before them, they walked beside this man, listening carefully to all he said. Somehow, his words brought them comfort. They felt a little as if their beloved master were again instructing them. Almost before they realized it, they had reached the little town of Emmaus, which was their home. Jesus said, "This is where we part. I'm traveling on farther." But the disciples did not want this stranger to leave them. "Stay with us," they begged. "This day is nearly over, and the darkness will soon be upon us. Stay with us this night." Jesus agreed and went with them into the house, a simple little house with thick walls. Soon the disciples had a light meal prepared. They invited Jesus to join them at the table. And when Jesus broke the bread and gave a piece to each as they had seen him do before, the disciples' eyes were suddenly opened, and they saw that the man they had believed a stranger was their beloved Jesus. When they had recognized him, Jesus disappeared. Immediately, the two men rose and started back to Jerusalem. They must hurry to tell the other disciples what had happened. Then the two who had come from Emmaus told that they had walked and talked with Jesus, that he had even broken bread with them at the table. And there was great happiness among them all. Doubting Thomas. Simon Peter said he had seen Jesus too. He didn't tell where he had seen Jesus or what Jesus had said to him. Not at that time or any time after did Peter tell what had happened when Jesus appeared to him. But it must have been an inspiring experience, for Peter was a changed man after that. From that time on, he was a leader among the disciples. And from then on, he showed a great courage, which had been lacking in him before. Some of the disciples in the upper room were still talking about Jesus having been seen, when suddenly he stood right there among them. "Peace be unto you," he said. But instead of rushing forward to greet him, the disciples drew back. Jesus had appeared among them so suddenly, so unexpectedly, they thought he was some sort of ghost rather than Jesus himself. They were plainly frightened. Seeing this, Jesus said, "Why are you troubled? And why do questionings arise in your hearts? See my hands and feet, that it is I, myself? Handle me and see.
For a ghost has not flesh and bones, as you see that I have.
But the disciples hesitated and held back.
Jesus decided to give them proof that it was really he. "Have you anything here to eat?" he asked. If he ate food, they would surely know that he stood before them in the flesh. The disciples brought out a piece of broiled fish and some honeycomb and laid it on the table before Jesus. And he sat down and ate it in front of them. The disciples then crowded around him. They saw that it was truly Jesus, the beloved master whom they had believed dead. And with the disciples gathered around him, Jesus spoke to them of what had been prophesied about him. He spoke of what was written in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms before he left them. The disciples were now filled with joy. Then Thomas arrived, and they all began to talk at once, pouring out their news to him, for Thomas had not been with them at the time of Jesus' appearance in the room. Thomas listened, but shook his head doubtfully. "I can't believe that Jesus is really alive," he said.
"But all of us saw him. All of us," cried the others.
But Thomas unhappily shook his head.
"Unless I see in his hands the print of the nails, and place my finger in the mark of the nails, and place my hand in his side, I will not believe," he said.
8 days later, the disciples were again gathered together in the room, and this time Thomas was with them. Suddenly, as before, Jesus stood right there among them, though the doors were shut.
"Peace be unto you," he said as before.
Then he looked right at Thomas.
"Put your finger here, Thomas," he said, "and see my hands, and put out your hand and place it at my side. Do not be faithless, but believing."
When Thomas had looked closely at Jesus' hands and had touched his hands and his side, he was convinced. Joyously, he cried out, "My master!" Jesus looked kindly upon Thomas. He understood that it was his nature to require proof if he were to believe. Jesus did not blame him for questioning. He honored his right to doubt and question and gave him the proof he needed.
Yet Jesus seemed a little disappointed that Thomas had not had unquestioning faith.
"Thomas," he said, "have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe."
Jesus appears at the Sea of Galilee. One evening, some of the disciples were at the Sea of Galilee, which is sometimes called the Sea of Tiberias. Looking out over the water, Peter remembered his fishing days of old.
"I'm going fishing," he said.
The others thought this was a good idea.
"We'll go with you," they cried.
So all of them got into a boat and went out a ways from shore. They fished all night, but they didn't catch a thing. Just as day was breaking, a man called to them from the shore.
"Children," he called, "have you any fish?"
They answered,
"No." "Cast the net on the right side of the boat," the man called to them. "Cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some."
The disciples thought this was an odd suggestion. The boat wasn't very wide, so it was no distance at all from one side of the boat to the other. Why, then, would there be fish on one side if not on the other?
"Might as well try it, though," said one of them.
"Sure," said another. "We've nothing to lose."
So, half laughing about the fish waiting for them on the other side, they cast their net to the right side of the boat. Immediately, it was filled with fish. Suddenly, they had so many fish in their net, they couldn't haul it in.
Seeing this, John knew who the man on the beach must be.
There was not enough light for him to see clearly.
But Jesus was the only one who could cause anything like this to happen.
"It is the Lord," John cried. "I know it is. The man on the shore is Jesus."
When Simon Peter heard this, he jumped into the sea and swam ashore that he might reach Jesus without any delay. The other disciples went in the boat, dragging the net full of fish. They didn't have far to go, for they were only about 100 yards off the shore. When they reached land, they saw that a charcoal fire had been started and fish were cooking on it. There was bread there, too. Jesus had prepared this for the disciples, and as they reached shore, he called, "Bring some of the fish you have just caught." Simon Peter went aboard and helped the others haul the net ashore full of large fish, 153 in all. And one of the things which amazed the disciples, and for which they were grateful, was that although they had caught so many fish, the net was not torn.
Jesus called, "Come and have breakfast."
And the disciples crowded around him.
It was such a comfort to have Jesus care for them just as he had in the past.
Peace and happiness filled their hearts. This was the third time that Jesus had appeared to a group of the disciples since his crucifixion. Now, as he stood beside the fire, Jesus took the bread into his hands. He broke the bread and gave a piece to each of the disciples. And he did the same thing with the fish. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" Peter said, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Then Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Peter knew that Jesus meant he should help people who were searching for God. He should help others demonstrate abundance, just as Jesus had helped the disciples that morning. Peter nodded in agreement, wondering if Jesus would tell him more of what he should do. Then a second time Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And again Simon Peter said, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Tend my sheep." Again Simon Peter nodded, waiting for Jesus to say more. Jesus was silent a few minutes, and then he put the question to Peter for the third time. "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was a little hurt that Jesus had said to him a third time, "Do you love me?" "Lord," he said, "you know everything. You know that I love you." And for the third time, Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." This time, Jesus did go on to say more. "Truly, truly," he said, "when you were young, you girded yourself and walked where you wanted to. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish to go." Jesus said this to show Peter that great trials lay ahead of him because he was going to do the work of God. But Peter did not weaken nor pull back from serving God at this time or any time afterward. He remembered that three times he had declared his love for Jesus, and he remained firm in his devotion to Jesus and to the work Jesus expected him to do. And there are many other things which Jesus did, but if they were all to be told, I suppose the world itself could not contain the books that should be written.